Good to see everyone this morning. We've got a number of visitors, and we're so thankful for your presence among us. I always have a number of, emotions or feelings before I get up and speak before a group of people like this. And the first one is probably a sense of humility, humbleness, with the job at hand. All these eyes, you know, looking up at someone with some expectation that they're going to say something worthwhile and useful. So I hope that I can do that. Also, just the privilege that it is to be able to, you know, be put in this position to speak to a congregation. And also a sense of excitement that I want to share things that I've learned. I would like to be able to impart things that I have studied and learned over time. It's not anything, nothing that I say here is not anything that any one of you can't study and learn. I have no private revelations of any kind. But the things that I tend to study and learn about may be a little bit different from what other people study and learn about. So with that, this is the last, the fourth, what I'm calling the supplemental part or part D of the series of messages that started off really as the vestibular system, and then the last time we talked about, in particular, the vestibulo-ocular reflex system, which ended with the amazing trochlea of the superior oblique muscle. Now, if you're visiting with us and all of that sounds completely foreign to you, don't worry about it, because what I'm going to talk about today doesn't have to necessarily, you don't have to know anything about that in order to get what I'm going to do today. Because there was a theme that I started with that I probably didn't really flush out as much as I perhaps should have. And that is this: system symmetry. System symmetry, we're leaving at this stage all of those anatomy details that I talked about for three lessons. And now we're getting back to what's been mentioned several times this morning, the big picture, a more expanded cross-section or sampling of what I mean by symmetry and system symmetry. This isn't something, this is my term. I do things that have letters that I can remember, like two S's or two S-Y's in my mind is something that I can retain. So system symmetry, though, very, very well describes what I'm wanting to get at and what I'm wanting to talk about and say, because system symmetry is present in all the life forms that the Lord has created. There may be a few exceptions to that in the smallest of creatures, but for the most part, there is system symmetry with everything, and that's where I started off with the vestibular system, and we talked about the inner ear and all of the organs that are the only thing you see is these little parts out here, they're called the ears, but you don't see what's inside. And what's inside is just dramatically complicated and integrated and coordinated and organized in a way that you cannot take something out without some detriment to the organism. So here's what we're going to do. This probably will not go as long. I pressed your patience on three times, so I'm going to try to keep this fairly concise here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you three groupings of slides that are samplings that emphasize different points slightly, but all have the same essential center, and that is system symmetry. So before we get into those three groupings, though, I want to define just a little bit what I mean by system symmetry. Our visual expectation, because we live in a world that is full of it, because it is basically all we ever see, is symmetry. It can most, for the most part, all creatures on earth, nearly all of them, with some exceptions of radial symmetry, like a sea urchin, and of course in the plant life as well. For the most part, what I'm going to be talking about is bilateral symmetry, which is, if you don't know what that is in particular, if you have an imaginary dotted line that went through me or anyone else, or any creature, for that example, or nearly any leaf on any tree, like if you think about a maple tree, or if you think about a human being, if you have an imaginary line going to the center of us, that's bilateral symmetry. You have a hand on this side, and you have a left and a right of every part. Now, I'll just throw this in for your knowledge. Since the discovery of the genome and the complex coding and language forms of our cell, the deoxyribonucleic acid, the DNA, they have been searching for a gene for symmetry because we see it everywhere. Well, there's not a gene for symmetry. But if they were to ever, and the reason that they probably will not find a gene for symmetry is because we are externally symmetrical, but we're not internally symmetrical in all ways. In other words, we have some of our organs in the visceral section of our bodies are not symmetrical. Our heart is not symmetrical. Our lungs are not symmetrical, believe it or not. Most people think they are, but they're not. Our stomach is not symmetrical, intestines, etc. So we have an illusion of being symmetrical on the outside, but we're actually not in some ways on the inside. Now, the vestibular system is, in many ways, symmetrical. But my point, though, is if we ever see someone, let's say, that was born without an arm, then there are people who are born without. I happen to know one of my distant relative of mine, who was born without an arm. He has like a nub right here. And he actually plays bass, upright bass. He uses that little part of his arm to fret the bass. But at any rate, but when you see someone without an arm, you recognize instantly that this is an anomaly. This is an exception to the rule. The rule is symmetry across the board. So that's what we're talking about. And within the symmetry of living things, there's, as I mentioned, a whole organization of specified parts that are coordinated and interdependent, not independent of one another. Our bodies and every living organism has parts that are interdependent. And that's an important point as we'll go on here. So that creates this uniformity of style that is part of the signature of God. This symmetry is part of the signature of God. It is instilled or as part of the design of everything that God has created. It is a well-defined order that is embedded and integrated in such a way that you can't take anything out and you can't add anything to it without some detriment to it. So it reminds me, I love this passage in Ecclesiastes 3. which says, He has made everything beautiful in His time. Also, He has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God has done from the beginning to the end. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, and nothing taken from it. God does it that men should fear before Him. This design element will be obvious as we look through these animal forms, both living and extinct. And I'll have some brief comments as we go through these. You'll be happy to know that I've limited myself to 10 samplings per slide section, so we won't go on forever. The first grouping of 10, then, will be by comparison of animals that are not extinct, but found as in fossilized form. And the particular ones, these first 10, will be creatures that the evolutionist, which is kind of what we're talking about, ultimately a contrast between the vain philosophy, theory, religion, cult religion as I see it, of evolution as opposed to, in contrast, the creation model of God that is a consistent throughout the Bible. So that's kind of what we're talking about. But from the evolutionary timeline, the things that I'm about to show you in the first slides are anywhere from 60 million years old to about 400 to 500 million years old. Now, I don't believe those dates. However, that's the paradigm that we're given. And I could talk a lot about that. But I believe that God created the heavens and the earth in 6 literal 24-hour days. I have no reason not to believe that. In fact, I have every reason to believe that that is exactly right, because that's actually the only explanation for origins that actually fits the facts as found in the real world. And that's what I'm going to show you this morning. So again, the theme of system symmetry will be evident in all of these, each of these three sets of slides. And just so you'll know what the timeline of evolutionists is in a little bit farther than what I've said. They would say that from the Big Bang, that event, they would say, is 13.8 billion years ago. Then they would say that the Earth is about 4.6 billion years old, and they would say that life began on Earth about 1.5 billion years ago. Now, keep that in mind as we look at the samplings of creatures that I'm about to show you. This is important material here. In the world that we're living in. It's important to know. The Bible clearly says that God created the life forms complete and diverse from the beginning, and there has been very little change since the very beginning. And that's what we're going to see in these first slides. And I could show you slides all day and all week and all year, but I've narrowed myself down to these 10. So let's see what we've got. System symmetry. Whoops, wrong one. There we go. Now, everybody in here knows what that is. That's a sand dollar. And that sand dollar is, again, I'm going to keep telling you this just so it, you know, embedded into your mind. That sand dollar is supposed to be anywhere from 60 to 70 million years old. This is a fossilized sand dollar. Whoops. You're right about that trigger. What was Earl? Did you say that was? It was a quick trigger on this slide mover here. But anyway, that's a sand dollar that you would find on the beach today. And Gene and I have collected many of those over the years. And there's some different varieties and species of sand dollar. But whenever I show you these slides, I want you to be asking the question in your mind, where's the evolution? That's what I want to know. Where's the evolution? If one of these is 70 million years old and the other one was yesterday, where's the evolution? I don't see any evolution here. Well, they're supposed to go one at a time. Now, here's a fossilized starfish of a certain variety, as you can see. And that one, again, is supposed to be in the, you know, umpteen millions of years old. Whoops, man. And here's one that someone is holding, you know, could have been yesterday. And again, where's the evolution? I'm not seeing it here. This slide actually came together. I didn't produce this one with the two side by side. This is, of course, a horseshoe crab. And the one on the left is one that was found in Sweden. And it's supposed to be the oldest specimen of a seahorse or horseshoe crab ever to be found. And the number on that was 168 million years old. Now, why? Okay, what's the deal here, Les? What I want you to see here is if this one is 168 million years old, and this one could have been got off of the, you know, the shore yesterday, what exactly is the difference? Where is the evolution? That's the point with these slides. Not only do I want you to see system symmetry, I do want you to see that. For example, I mean, we could, look at things like these little points down here. You know, we could look at this interesting shape up here. You know, all of this is related to the symmetry that is designed within the organism. But the point that I'm making with this particular set of slides is there is no evolution. The one that is 168 million years old, supposedly, is identical to the one that could have been caught yesterday. All right, let's look at another one. What is that? It's a maple leaf, right? Now, that maple leaf is supposed to be 70 million years old. That maple leaf could have been fallen off of a tree. That's a fall maple leaf. Could have been yesterday, or it could have been this fall. So what's the where's the evolution? That's the question. Where is it? One's 70 million years old, and the other one's yesterday. Where is the evolution? There is no evolution. None. No evolution. It is a lie. It is a huge deception. And that's why I keep harping on it. Whoops. What is that? That is a boll weevil that has been in amber. You know what amber is, most people know. Amber is where the sap of a tree comes over, usually an insect, sometimes other things, leaves, even small birds. Lizards sometimes get caught in amber, and the amber fossilizes. Well, this boll weevil is supposed to, again, I didn't write down all the supposed dates of these things. Millions and millions and millions of years old, this boll weevil. Well, what is that? Well, that's a boll weevil. What's our question? Where's the evolution? There is no evolution. None. Not even a little bit. What is that? Another insect called an amber. That's a mosquito. And that's a mosquito. Where's the evolution? We could do this all day. We could do this all week. We could do this all year. There is no evolution. None. Zero. All right. Last, I believe this is the last one. That's the famous coelacanth. The coelacanth was proposed that when it was first caught in 1938 by some fishermen off of the coast of Madagascar, which is an island off of the tip of Africa. And it was proposed to be the missing link, the transitional form between fish and amphibian. They believed that this coelacanth, because of its longer fin, they believed that it was just about to walk up on the beach, you know, and become a living or a breathing, air-breathing, amphibian. And so then they've started, and this one here was supposed to be 400 million years old. If you ever go to Washington, D.C., which we've been several times, they have a large, this is a large fish. This is probably 4 feet. You will see there, if you ever go to the Natural History Museum in Washington, you will see a fossilized coelacanth that looks just about like this one. And then right above it, you will see a stuffed coelacanth. Now, they're not making their point very well, because the whole museum is all about evolution. But there is no evolution. Here's a scuba diver with a coelacanth that is living. And again, there is no difference between the 400 million year old coelacanth and the ones you can catch today. Zero difference. Where's the evolution? There is no evolution. None. What is that? Again, same thing. In Washington, D.C., they'll have a frog like that is fossilized that they'll put some immense amount of time on. And right beside it, this is downstairs. If you go in the lower level, they'll have these, and then they'll have in a jar in formaldehyde, they'll have a frog. Okay, well, you know, where's the evolution? There is no evolution. None. It is a fairy tale. Let me see what's next here. All right, I mentioned a bird. Actually, let me just explain this a little bit. This bird here is superimposed. This is a baby bird that's superimposed in this amber because it's dark. The original one, it's difficult to see. So I found this slide of this sampling, but here's the claw, as you can see, and then it gets a little bit darker in the whole thing. But anyway, this bird has been superimposed just to show you what the position of the bird was found in that a bit of amber sampling, of course, I just found that on the images. So, but it's obvious. But the point still is obvious. Here is a bird that's supposed to be some many millions and millions of years old, but yet there's no evident difference between it and any baby bird today. It's still has two wings, two eyes, two claws, all the things it needs to fly. There is no evolution. None. Now, let me see. Is that our last? Let me catch up with where I'm at here. I think that's my last one. Let me see on that. No, it isn't. Okay. What is that? That's a scorpion, right? Now, again, people find these, and the reason it's in this shape is they make jewelry out of them. Sometimes when they find them, you can actually buy jewelry that is made out of a sample of, something in amber. I've got a whole book full of these, by the way. And here's a scorpion that, could have been, again, yesterday. But if we haven't been doing this, but if I wanted to do this, I could do this. And that is, I could count these legs. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. And then claws. 1, 2. We could go through these and look at them in extreme detail and see the system symmetry. And again, what is our question? Where's the evolution? Where's the evolution between the 50 million year old scorpion and the today scorpion? There's no evolution. None. Let me see. One more. What is that? A butterfly, right? I'm not sure the species of butterfly that is. All right. And then I chose one that was about the same size to show you. But obviously, they're both butterflies. One's supposed to be something, millions of years old, and the other one is today. Again, where's the how do you get a butterfly, by the way? Really? I mean, how do you get a butterfly? Well, first of all, you have to have two of them. You have to have a male and a female butterfly. They don't come from caterpillars, by the way. Caterpillars have no sexual organs. Caterpillars cannot mate. However, the caterpillars are actually already they're already genetically male or female, but they're not, they have no organs that tell them that they're male or female. They only become male and female when they're in the chrysalis or the cocoon. So how do you get a butterfly? You have to have them created with all the genetic material to go through all the stages from the beginning. That's the only way you can get one, and that in their own species, of course. So, all right, I think that's our last slide on that section. Those were 10 samples. Now we're going to go on to our next 10 picture. These will actually be 10, just 10 pictures, rather than the sequence that I was having there, sort of. But the next 10 pictures show living forms that clearly demonstrate our theme, which is system symmetry. Symmetry through random mutations is not just improbable, it's impossible. You cannot get symmetry through random mutations. It will not work. It has never been demonstrated, and it never will be. Mutations are detrimental. They're destructive, not constructive. So these patterns have to be integrated into the genetic code from the beginning of the existence of every form of life that is on Earth. And the existence of all of these forms of life is 100% proof that there is an unbroken line of ancestry, parenthood, all the way back to the beginning. You know why I know that? Because this is the reason. Whenever something goes extinct, that is, the last of its kind dies, and we're going to look at some of those, they never come back. Never. So everything that exists on Earth today is 100% proof that their ancestry goes back to the beginning. Because once they die out, once any species dies out, That's it. We're not going to get any Apatosauruses again because their species died out, apparently. I mean, there are reports of some living in the, you know, jungles of Amazon. I haven't determined, haven't seen proof that that's true or not. But my point, though, is that we'll get into this a little bit more, but Darwin's tree of life, you know, where you've got this tree with all the different, you know, animal creatures on the ends of the tree, it's actually upside down. There isn't a continual increase of species or kinds. It's actually the other way around. It's upside down. There's a continual decrease of species. You know, the world of environmentalists and, you know, animal rights activists and all these are so concerned about the extinction. Well, why? I thought they just evolve and we just get more of them. Why are we so concerned about extinction? Because they know, and I know, and you know, that when a saber-toothed tiger, the last pair of them die, that's it. They're never coming back. So the truth is that there is a continual decrease rather than a continual increase, which is opposite of evolution. So we spent three long lessons talking about the complex symmetry of the inner ear and the vestibular system. And we could take any one of these things that we're looking at today and we could do the same thing. But what this is we're looking at a larger picture. So, but the anatomy of all creatures is amazing. Now, here we go into the next section of 10. So we start off with butterflies because butterflies are, and moths as well, is just one of those small creatures that is just obvious that the things that you have on one side are similar, or not just similar, identical to the things you have on the other side. And, you know, we could look at these little, what they call eyes. They're not really eyes, but they're, you know, just take note of these details. This does not happen by accident. You know, interesting that God apparently likes borders on things because he puts borders on these. See, we've been so indoctrinated by evolution, we don't even recognize that God is doing things design-wise with creatures that he's created. You know, this one also has a border, you know, has these little white dots here. So, but this is an excellent, we talked about butterflies, but we didn't mention the fact that, you know, how do you get these designs? Well, these designs are created by tiny little microscopic scales. There's about 600 per millimeter, which is like a mosaic. It's like each one of these designs is like a bilaterally symmetrical mosaic, that all these little scales are placed in a certain pattern to create what that butterfly looks like. So I did a whole sermon one time on butterflies, so I'll try. I try not to talk too much about each one of these things. Here's something else that Tristan used to love finding bugs. That was one of his favorite things, and I assume you still do, Tristan. So, but yeah, he used to be really fascinated with beetles and bugs, and he would find them and bring them into my studio when I was in the studio, and our other children as well, but Tristan seemed to me to be particularly interested. But beetles, you know, again, you've got this beautiful symmetry. And incidentally, many of these creatures that we're looking at, the patterns are like a ladybug that are unique to that individual. They're like our fingerprint. You know, there's not two alike. So even though there are design elements that are the same, the individual forms within them are oftentimes slightly different, like your fingerprint. So incidentally, most beetles, if not all beetles, have wings. The what you're seeing there, these coverings, are not the wings. These are coverings for the wings. So when the beetle opens up those coverings, then he folds out the wings. You ever examined like one of the larger beetles, like a June bug, and noticed that the wings are actually folded up underneath the covers, and those colorful covers are usually almost, well, as far as I know, always symmetrical. What is that? Well, that's a macaw, a kind of parrot. Again, beautiful symmetry in flight there. Lots and lots of other birds, like this one here, sort of the granddaddy of them all as far as the bird family goes, a pheasant. I bet you've heard all your life, like I've heard all my life, that the reason for all this extraordinary plumage is so that the peacock can find a mate, or so that the peahen will be attracted to his mate or her mate, okay? Well, why don't sparrows, why is it that sparrows don't seem to be having any trouble finding a mate? Why is it that slugs have no problem finding a mate, apparently? I've got lots of them in our garden, in the spring. This is dumb stuff, people. It really it annoys me greatly. If God wants to create a peacock with magnificent plumage, he can do it. That's really the beginning and the end of it is, the peacock is like this because God made him like this. All right, we got to move on here. What is that? It's a whale shark. Yeah, I heard somebody say that. So an interesting, notice this grid, sort of grid pattern here, and a white dot in each one of these little grid patterns. Is that not amazing? Isn't it obvious that these things are designed? So you see, we have to be taught out of what is obvious. This is obvious. There is something closer to home here, a box turtle. And again, notice this shell, little patterns that are symmetrical. When Lindsay and I went turkey hunting one time, and we saw in that when we were turkey hunting, we didn't get a turkey, but we did see a turtle that looked just about like that one. Now this is a really good sample. This is a kind of boa here, but what I want you to notice about this one, look at this rectangle. Here's a rectangle and an X. 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 Well, amazing. Isn't that amazing? Well, that's a very, among those of us who are designers like myself, this is a very common part of design criteria, and that is a repetition of a design. You see it all over the place. You see it everywhere in things that humans design. You see this repetition of design. Now look at this. Look at the fact that this is not this snake here. This is a different one, but notice the fact that this design that is part of the snake, it's not just the individual scales that create the design. Actually, some of the scales actually are changing within the scale. You see, some of them have dark, white, and then gray in order to create the whole design. So sometimes it's not even like a mosaic where each individual scale is the same. The design is on the inside and it comes out through the scales, which is just greater evidence that it is designed to be that way. It is so obvious that it is. Isn't that a handsome creature? That's a handsome creature right there, a tiger. And again, notice the beautiful symmetry of his face. You call that a handsome creature? That's kind of a funny creature. That's a panda bear, obviously. You know, we would look really crazy, you know, if we had these black marks on our eyes, we'd look pretty dumb, but he looks pretty cool with it. So God has a sense of humor. Look at those ears. Isn't that amazing? All right, let me see if there, you know what that is? That's a chameleon. He looks like he's about to preach. You know, he's got his hand in the air just like that. So he looks like he's about to say something. And if he were to say something, he'd probably be preaching from Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament shows his handiwork. Or he might be preaching from Romans 1, the invisible things of God are clearly seen by the things which he has made. Isn't this obvious? All right, now we're to this is the last section. I'm sorry, this is taking longer than I thought it was, but I'll go through these quickly. Now, why is it that every time we find something in the dirt, we have an expectation that it's going to be symmetrical? Paleontologists, when they find a sample like this, Triceratops, they count every bone. Why? Because they want to make sure that they've got all the ribs, that they've got all the feet bones, the ankle bones, the leg bones, that they've got all of them. Why? Because they know it's symmetrical. Well, why is it symmetrical? It doesn't come through mutation. It doesn't come through random chance events. It has to be designed to be that way. All right. That's an Argentinosaurus there, the largest of the sauropods. See all those little children down there probably being taught the religion of Darwinism. But look how big this creature is. This right here is part of his tail, by the way. It's coming this way. This is in Atlanta. You can go down there and see it. It's in Atlanta, Georgia. Look at the size. Look at this. Look at the size of it. Why? Look at the repetition of these neck bones and all this detail. And imagine that, I mean, if you saw any of the Jurassic Park movies, and you see these humongous creatures walking about. Well, the ones in the movie aren't any bigger than this one. But imagine all the muscles and nerves and sinews and all of the things that relate to the system symmetry of a creature like this. Just unbelievable. Amazing. Here's another one with his little baby. Here's a Stegosaurus. Again, I'm going to go through these because I'm way past time here. Tyrannosaurus. By the way, you know what the Tyrannosaurus is supposed to be today? The chicken. Yes, the chicken. They believe that the Tyrannosaurus grew feathers and became a chicken. Now, I was watching a debate the other day, and one of the evolutionists on the debate team said, I'm so happy, it makes me so happy when I eat chicken because I know that my ancestors were eaten by them years ago. This is stupid stuff, people. All right, there's a plesiosaur. You know what those are? They live in the water. And notice that there's fins on each side. I think this is our last one. Now, this is an extinct turtle, huge extinct turtle. You see anything missing from that turtle? Yeah, one of his hind feet is missing, isn't it? Don't you bet that the person who found that specimen looked really hard to find that other foot? I bet they did. Why didn't they just assume, well, this one only had 3 feet? Here's a turtle that only has 3 feet. I've got it all. No, you know they didn't do that. They looked for the other one. It's a mammoth, same thing. We could talk about these things all day. But, well, what in the world does that have to do with anything? Well, Gina and I were privileged to actually see the original of this Norman Rockwell family tree up in the Norman Rockwell Museum up in New York. And I highly recommend anybody that can go up there and see this. It's really wonderful. It's not just this painting. It's many, many, many of his paintings. But this one, you know, here, people know what a family tree is. Usually it's just names. You know, Norman Rockwell is an artist, so he used, you know, picture of people to illustrate this family tree, right? So all evolution is lines on paper. Darwin took a family tree form, and rather than having human beings on the ends of the limbs as the family tree, he put all of the living things on that tree. So it's a visual deception that says, oh, so we're related to everything, not just humans. Humans are related to mosquitoes and dragonflies and triceratops. No, it's not true. It's a deception. It's a visual deception. Here's a slide that shows the agenda of the evolutionist. Look at what, I don't know if you can read some of these. All right, here we mention a dragonfly. This says, my 300 millionth cousin. Here's the starfish, says, my 280 millionth cousin. My 195 millionth cousin. Here's my 300 millionth cousin. Here's a frog, my 175 millionth cousin. Well, it used to be that if a frog became a prince, that was a fairy tale. But if you add millions of years to it, then it's science. No, it isn't. It's still a fairy tale. This is a fairy tale. It's not true. I hope I'm making my point. I need to close here. Let me finish up quickly. There's so much more that could be said, and I've said a lot before, so I'm going to leave this subject for a while because I've been on it for a long time, not that I'm leaving it entirely. But what I want you to know is that a chart like this clearly spells out the agenda to reduce you to another animal that has no relationship to a creator, but rather has a relationship with other animals. That's the idea and that's the point. In any other context, this kind of mysticism would be laughable. But because it's labeled science, we're supposed to accept it without question. Evolution is an ignorance-based religion with no observable facts, and it is full of hidden assumptions. A few of them would be non-living matter looks for a way to improve itself. That's one of the assumptions of evolution. Or that random mutations add new and greater information. That's an assumption that is not true. Never been proven, never been shown. Or like what we've been talking about this morning, like living things automatically produce complex mirror symmetry. That's an assumption that they're making. Random mutations do not make systematic symmetry. It doesn't happen. It never has. It never will. Humans are projecting our sense of progress and growth as a culture onto biology so that they think that a protista or an amoeba are desiring to somehow become better. Well, they're still here, of course, and they're still protistas and amoebas. They haven't become anything different. In the fairy tale make-believe land of shape-shifting and morphism, lizards grow wings and fly, wolves become whales, and giant dinosaurs grow feathers and become chickens, and apes and orangutans and baboons grow into human beings. It is not true. It is a lie. The fairy tale religion of Darwinism. Long ago and far away, an invisible dot exploded and created a universe and created people who are so smart that they believe they came from an invisible dot. Let me straighten this out. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Isn't it amazing the lengths that people will go to deny our Creator? Most people in the world, I've determined, need to be deprogrammed from this brainwashing and mind control. Most people in this world today need to be deprogrammed from this mind control. And it starts at childhood. It starts with dinosaur books. It starts in public schools and universities and through the media and a zillion of other places. They have gotten control of the narrative, and they have a monopoly on the what's not what the science of origins. I know it, you know it, this is the way it is. So we've got a lot of work to do. And I hope you'll join me in fighting this godless theory that is taking a lot of very intelligent people and turning them in a direction towards atheism and agnosticism and anti-God philosophies. Well, I'm going to stop. Thank you so much for your patience. If we can help you in any way come draw closer to the Lord, then we would love to do that while together we stand and sing the chosen song.